We'll call the joint Senate Finance Committee and Judiciary Committee meeting to order. Today is Monday, October 23rd, 2017. We are in the state capital, Juneau, Alaska, in the Senate Finance Room. Members of the Senate Finance Committee that are present, myself, Senator Hoffman, Vice Chairman, Senator Bishop, Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Machicki, and our newest member, Senator Stevens, and we have Senator Olson.
And thank you, Chairman. From the Judiciary Committee, we have Senator Costello here with us. Kevin Meyer, who was a member, and then we have Bill Wilkowski on the other side, and then our member from the Valley, Dunleavy.
Thank you.
It's getting terrible when you start getting a little old. It stopped right there. Sorry, Senator.
Thank you for that. Today, we are dealing with Senate Bill 54, a rewrite or amendments to Senate Bill 91, the crime bill. And members may be wondering why we're having the hearings here today. We all are well aware that the Senate has taken action. Senate Bill 91 is the law of the land. Senate Bill 54 is the Senate's version of fixes to that bill. We have taken action on Senate Bill 54, and the bill is currently in the other body. We want to make sure that we stay focused on the need to fix the problems that we had in Senate Bill 91. And as I said, those are the versions that are in Senate Bill 54, waiting action on in the other body. But at this point, we would like the members of this committee, both of the committees and members of the Senate and the general public, to get an understanding of where the Senate is at this time and give an update as to exactly where we are. We also have Senator Anna McKinnon. She is online, a member of the Finance Committee.
And Senator Pete Kelly, the presiding officer of the Senate, also a member of Judiciary Committee.
So again, we in the Senate strongly believe that additional fixes need to happen to Senate Bill 91, and those are in the form of Senate Bill 54. At this point, I would like to turn it over to Senator John Coghill, who was the prime sponsor of Senate Bill 91, to give a general review of that bill and the need for the fixes. We will also, after the presentation by Senator Coghill, be bringing to the table Commissioner Walt Monaghan from the Department of Public Safety and John Skidmore, the Director of the Criminal Division, Department of Law, to address what they see as the needs to fix some of the problems in 91 and maybe address any questions that members may have regarding Senate Bill 54. Senator Coghill.
Thank you. And I thought what I'd do is just start with maybe 2 or 3 minutes, a brief overview. But before I do that, I just got notice that I should probably notice some of the senators here also in the audience here. We have Senator David Wilson, Senator Giesel, and Senator Tom Begich also with us. And Senator Egan, thank you for showing up here. Greatly appreciate it. Senate Bill 91 is the product, as you all well know, of a commission that was put together some years ago under Senate Bill 64. They came up with 21 recommendations. The question that we had before them is, why is our recidivism rate so high? What can we do about it? Go look for the data-driven processes all over America. Come back with some input. They did. Those, for the most part, ended up in Senate Bill 91. Senate Bill 91 was meant to try to take what we have as resource kind of strapped area and make the best use of our money. So it was meant to strengthen our probation parole. It was meant to try to reinvest wherever we could reinvest, incentivize compliance with good behavior. It increases some mandatory minimums that were not congruent with public condemnation. Required risk assessments probably for the first time, and post-jail planning. Defendants released on pretrial supervision probably for the first time in a coordinated way, which, by the way, has yet to totally come to fruition. I'll explain that. It required more severe penalties on drug dealing, drug traffickers, and it changed some of the lower level penalties, which has become some of the issues. It established court reminders and enhanced victims' advocacy fairly significantly. So in the process of implementation, we realized that the probation that we had set forward for some of the crimes wasn't sufficient. We found out that property theft was on its rise, and the tools to the police were not there sufficiently. And the violations of conditions of release, we found out people were getting to court, were the courts were having a hard time interpreting. So what we had to do in order to respond to both public outcry, the police input, and the Department of Law was we had to fix some of those things in Senate Bill 91. So they came out in the form of Senate Bill 54, which we passed last year. What that Senate bill did was it took the violations of conditions of release and recriminalized that violation so that there would be a penalty over them to cause a change of action or put them in jail if need be. What we did was we debated at length the first-time C felony. Our C felonies have a broad range, and you'll probably hear from the Department of Law a little bit about that. That broad range, we narrowed the discretionary scope so significantly that the probationary period just was not going to work, and it wasn't going to fit the crime and the outcry of what was happening in Alaska at this present time. So we passed out this first-time C felony up to a year of jail time penalty. That seemed to it came from the Department of Law. It was brought to the Senate, and we passed it to the House that way. The other thing we did was we started escalating again the theft crimes, the B felonies. We put in a situation where the first time was one penalty, no jail time, but a penalty with a fine potential, and then after that, jail time potential, second and third time. Once again, the Department of Law showed us where what we put together just wasn't enough incentive to get people to change their behavior. And then we put an aggravate on an A misdemeanor that allowed judges a little more discretion. So you add those four things up, and it delivered tools to the police who felt like they couldn't hold people. It answered some of the challenges to the courts. And when we passed it from the Senate, the expectation was that the debate would probably follow mostly along the C felony lines, because the debate was, should it be, we started off at 18 years probation. We ended up debating the commission recommended 90 days potential jail time. I remember advocating for 120 days somewhere in that neighborhood, and what we passed out was a one-year range for the judges. We figured that would be probably the biggest point of contention. But what we did find throughout this summer now, as we've talked about these changes, we found out that the Department of Law, the courts, and the police all recognize that these tools are going to be sufficient to implement public safety. The trouble is, they're not implemented yet. We have done the best we can to get it over to the House, and they are debating it starting today. So we just wanted to reset where we're at, how we got where we're at, and what we have done to answer the concerns that Senate Bill 91 left languishing Senate Bill 54. One of the other things we did was Senate Bill 55, which did end up into law, which for the most part were making things work and technical issues. So outside of municipal authority, the rest of it was fairly technical. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I think we could probably go into some testimony. The focus of this is to show that we actually have answered some of the serious public safety concerns in Senate Bill 54.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. At this time, I would like to invite Commissioner Monaghan of the Department of Public Safety and Director Skidmore from the Criminal Division, Department of Law, to the table. Commissioner Monaghan, can you identify yourself for the record and proceed with your presentation in regards for the need for Senate Bill 54 and any additional comments you may have?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Walt Monaghan. I am the Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety, and I am delighted to be able to speak to why I think SB 54 is absolutely necessary. We had numerous meetings, town hall meetings, as well as commission meetings, where there was public testimony introduced, and there was a number of individuals who expressed their dismay on what was happening. So we heard them. It's not necessarily the data-driven things that we wanted to get done in the commission, but we heard them and listened to them. So the public condemnation aspect of this was sorely needed. So we worked with law and the commission, and we resolved that we put forth what you have put together on an SB 54.
Do we have any questions from committee members? Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. SB 54 in its current form, after its amendments, as it sits in the House, is what you're talking about, that currently meets your desires for the for a corrections bill for SB 91. Is that correct?
The I may not be totally up on speed of what is the amendments on the House side.
There are no amendments yet. I guess I just meant the version that left the Senate essentially is somewhat meets your needs. From Department of Safety's needs.
Through the chair, Senator Kelly, everything that was in SB 54 that it was initially presented, we support.
Okay.
That it has the ability to provide the discretion back to the judges where they can look at each case in its the totality of circumstances. It's not a cookie cutter 1 year, 2 year probation thing. It is something that can be addressed to the facts of the case. So we support that.
Thank you.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. And Commissioner Monaghan, I appreciate what you've had to say, and I think I agree with you. But I wanted to get on the record the objections we've heard to Senate Bill 91. A lot of folks have talked about the need to totally withdraw it and do away with it. It doesn't. That seems to me to be not necessary. Every major bill requires some modifications as you go along. Could you tell us what your feelings are about the complete replacement of 91?
Thank you, Chair, Senator Stevens. Speaking as a longtime law enforcement individual and the chief of police in Anchorage for 5.5 years, what we were doing before just wasn't working. We were seeing that recidivism rate at 2 out of 3 returning. Individuals that we had arrested, we had rearrested. So we needed something definitely to work in a better way, in a smarter way, to try to address some of the issues. And when this concept first came out back in Senate Bill 64, I believe what it was, I was asked to look at it and review it. I was then running the Alaska Native Justice Center. And this was the way that I thought that we could actually explore and address the entire criminal justice system, quite honestly, in a more humane way. What we had fallen to, in my perspective, was that everybody was addressed in a docket number, and individuals were kind of minimized as humans and just totally portrayed on the act. What this does with Senate Bill 91 is it actually has the opportunity to address each individual that is arrested in the system and try to get them to change their ways as opposed to just the shaming and the shutting them up, locking them away for a while, which I think for most people would look at it as someone who would be sit there and basically smolder and become more resentful and more anti-social in their behaviors. So I support 91. I think that's a better way to be. And but as we did put it out, there were some tweaks that needed to be done, and we support those, both 55 and 54.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, you've said that 54 is absolutely necessary. And as we look at some of the criticism that has gone on both sides of the issue, some of them say that not enough time has gone on for 91 to show what its real effect is on things like recidivism, and especially amongst the rural incarcerates that are out there, those detainees that, you know, are outside of the metropolitan areas. Is that indeed true, or has it been a culmination of events where you not only have a change in the law, you also have a change in society where the opioid epidemic has taken a strong foothold, so that no matter what law you had out there, there certainly would have been the public outcry, and this just seems to be the easiest way to go ahead and put blame on somebody.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, you're on in regards to the blaming of it. It is the most recent change, and I think people just have a look at this particular situation as if we just get rid of it, or if we that is actually wrong-headed thinking in my mind. There has been a rise in crime with the drug epidemic that's sweeping not only Alaska but all across the United States. There's an uptick in all those areas. With the exception of arson and homicide, everything else has been rising. And so when you add that, the drug epidemic, to the other issues that the state has been facing, it's kind of an easy blame, an easy thing, but it's truly, those who understand it and look at it, they'll know it's the right direction to do the tweaking of 91, not the elimination of 91.
Last question, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
So you're stand by your statement that 54 is absolutely necessary?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Monaghan, I just pulled some numbers, and I just think this is important to discuss. I remember when I got into office, the crime rate had begun increasing. I just roughly three crimes here, robbery, burglary, and auto theft. And one of the things we hear, I mean, I just think it's important to get on the table that there really doesn't seem to be a correlation looking from 11 until 15, certainly through 14, the total department spending, DPS spending, increased each of those years. Yet the crime rate increased at a more rapid rate than the increase in funding. So considering the fact that we have a number of I'm just talking about DPS. We'll talk about law later, but considering the number of empty positions that we have, if you remember, we funded five additional trooper positions last year in the budget. We also requested a report from your department on how those positions would be filled. I think there's 60 empty positions. You can help correct me with that, but I'll ask the question first if you can help me with that. But that report was going to talk about the reason for the vacancies and a plan to fill them and then retain those individuals, what it would take. I guess my point is Isn't it true that essentially the crime rate began increasing in 11, began rapidly increasing in 14, and I'm not defending 91, but 91 passed, began taking effect in mid-2016?
Through the chair, Senator Machiki, that is, the crime rate was rising long before SB 91. Again, it was in part because of the opioid, as well as the reduction not only in state troopers, but a major factor is there is a reduction in the Anchorage Police Department as well. So the state and the state's largest police department both saw reductions. And it's what happens normally when you see a loss of troopers or police officers is that you have to have a tendency to do the higher priority crimes, respond to where people crimes will always trump property crimes. And so in that case, some of the addressed or the problems with the property crimes were not being adequately addressed or timely addressed because there were disturbances, there were robberies versus, and as always, things like motor vehicle crashes and DUIs. It's unfortunate all of it happened, and I think, again, without overusing that perfect storm analogy, that's exactly what we had, a reduction in force, a drug-induced increase in crime, and I think there was even, just those two factors alone, I think, are sufficient.
Senator Machiki.
Quick follow-up. And I, obviously we took your department's suggestions and the commission's suggestions to heart. I mean, the Senate passed 55. We passed Senate Bill 54 7 months ago, April 7th. I mean, it's been a priority for the Senate, and we certainly hope the other body agrees with the changes. I think it's necessary to replace some of those tools that changed in 91. I just think it's important for people to know. I mean, the Senate is going to do what it takes to help relieve the increase in crime in the state of Alaska, but these two bills are not the end-all to the solution. We've got a lot more work to do in this state. This increase is a national problem, and although we're going to do what we can to improve this, our criminal law in this state to help you, help your department, until we really understand, interrupt the flow of drugs into our communities, understand what some of the socioeconomic issues are, it's not a silver bullet. Right? We have a lot of other issues that we're seeing. And when you look at the cycles of crime in Alaska, they kind of follow some of that economic downturn as well. I mean, do you have a comment on that? And that'll be my last question, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner.
Okay, through the chair, Senator Machiki, you're right. Crime is cyclical, and it does follow the economic uptick or downturn that where drugs, for example, where we're in a vibrant economy, there is a lot of folks had the ability to go ahead and purchase their own without having to steal, and when in a downtick, in order to satisfy that habit, a lot of individuals will take anything they can to convert them into drugs, and that means everything from siphoning gas out of parked cars to breaking into sheds or stolen cars, anything they can do to satisfy their habit. So it is, it's pretty much, like I said earlier, it's a national problem. We can't do a lot about that, but we certainly, I think, with 54 can give us some of the tools back to help address some of the things that we have to do to get individuals to be held accountable.
Thank you, Commissioner. Are there additional questions? Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When I sat on the Judiciary Committee when we had quite a few hearings on Senate Bill 91, and the Attorney General, the Commissioner of Public Safety, your predecessor, and Commissioner of Corrections were all asked, if we pass Senate Bill 91, would it have any sort of detrimental impact on public safety? That was a big concern of the committee. And we were all told definitively that it would not. So I guess question one is, were they wrong? And question two is, what percent or what sort of decreases can we expect to see in crime if we pass Senate Bill 54?
Mr. Commissioner.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski. That, as far as the first part, I don't think anybody envisioned that there was going to be the drug epidemic is hitting as strongly as it had, driving the uptick on that. It is a situation like a lot of human endeavors that if we think we have a better idea, we have a plan, we start to initiate it, that sometimes it goes awry or we didn't envision everything that would have been a factor on it. So I am sure that our predecessors probably were very confident that it would be not detrimental to public safety. However, reality and the drug epidemic has shown it otherwise. To your second question about what kind of percentage can we see, you know, that'll be something that I can't give it to you right now. I can't say it's going to cut things down 10-15% or whatever. I think that understanding that in addition to what we are doing it with intervention and with education, the actual apprehension of individuals who are committing these crimes, theft and burglary and car theft, having them, especially in the C felonies, facing up to a year, having that judge look at their particular case, there may be more incentive for the individuals who have been apprehended and are standing before that judge to seek treatment versus anything else. And I think that was the hope for 91 is, again, trying to treat individuals in a more correct and humane manner to their issues. So I could probably pick a number, but it would only be a guess if you're looking for a percentage in reduction of crime.
Thank you, Commissioner. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the answer, and I know we've gotten specifics from Mr. Skidmore on how many crimes have not been prosecuted because of lack of prosecutors, and that's why I'm curious if you had any sort of numbers that way. But I guess this is maybe a broader question, and it's just on sort of the culture of crime in this state. We have a violent state, particularly for women. How do we change that? You've been in public safety for many, many years, and what do you think we need to do to change this culture of violence that we have in this state? It's much more violent than many other states with domestic violence, with sexual assault. How do we change that?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, that to change the environment in any particular state, especially up here, there needs to be all hands on deck. It has to include everything from education to enforcement to treatment, all of it. To kind of reiterate an old cliche, it takes a village to raise a child. And we are the village. And every one of our citizens is a child. And so the more that we collectively can do to aid the correct decisions through information, through accountability, I think is the best way we can handle it. But it starts with trying to address SB 54 right now.
Senator Wilikowski?
Yeah, thank you. Should the people of Alaska think or believe that if we pass Senate Bill 54 that this is going to solve the crime problem in Alaska, or do we still have a lot more to go, and do you have specific policy ideas that we should be looking at in between now and January that we need to take to try to address the crime problem?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, the 54 is a good first step. This is a journey. Basically, I think when people were asking me, other fellow law enforcement individuals, 91 is a process. It's more than a product, like all criminal justice efforts are. There are always changing factors. The economy is one of them, and other things that play into it. But a good first step will be the passage of 54 and signed into law to make the tweaks. What will help is the fact that the commission has been extended for another, a little more than 3 years now, 4 years. Again, that can kind of keep an eye. These are individuals, basically subject matter experts from across the state that each have or are sat on the spectrum of all of criminal justice. And with that kind of thinking, with that kind of oversight, as more issues may come to light that we have yet to see, then they will be able to make another, we will be able to make another adjustment or suggestion for us. But the other part that I think a lot of folks right now, SB 91 isn't fully built yet. We haven't got the pretrial folks up on and running. So once all the pieces come into play and given some time for its showing of its processes, I think we'll have a clearer picture then. And right now, again, a lot of the data is so new, we are still fluctuating with it. We're still, we don't have all the pieces in place. So it's hard to kind of, it's a moving target at the moment. And it would be hard to be able to say these are the next steps that have to happen. But that's what the commission's there for.
Thank you, Commissioner. I think it cannot be overstressed the importance of the commission and the commission reports. It was because of the requirements in 91 that we had formed the commission that resulted in the recommendations of 54. So if the people of Alaska can understand one thing about crime in Alaska, that the Senate and the House are continuing to look at what problems might arise, and that is why the extension of that commission is so critical to get input from people from all spectrums of Alaska. Thank you, Senator Wilkowski, Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Sherman. Commissioner Monaghan, thank you for being here today. A question that I have for you is, in your opinion, has the passage of legalizing marijuana had any effect on crime in any category, or potentially at even the number of accidents that have come across affecting, and so then it takes public safety officers time addressing those accidents?
Through the chair, Senator Van Imhoff. It's, I think it's still too early in regards to our ability to actually pinpoint that marijuana legalization is causing enough of a problem in impaired driving. Certainly the alcohol is easy because we can detect that in the blood. We can do regular tests. We do have troopers that are trained with drug recognition enforcement. But it's still kind of a new thing. And candidly, everything I've been told so far, it's usually a mix. Some marijuana, some alcohol. And I don't know if that's ever really changed, because back in the years before it was legal, we still had issues with that. I remember arresting an individual that was all over the road, and they blew 0-0. And so totally it was on drugs. So at this point, it's the law of the land as well, and we will deal with it as we must. But I can't give you definitive numbers to say it's causing rampant issues beyond.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Von Imhoff. Senator Dunleavy.
In the meantime, what do we tell the people of Alaska who are coming to some of us and saying, for the first time, I'm buying a gun. I'm installing floodlights on our property. I'm installing cameras. I'm changing my behavior. In other words, you were born and raised here. I came up in 83. And Alaska's always had a very wide tolerance for behaviors, more so than probably other any other state. And all of a sudden, at least for me and others, there has been a significant change in the way they view their fellow Alaskans and their own daily activities now. Folks are locking their doors. I was at a hardware store the other day, and there were two or three people rekeying their doors. In other words, they're starting to feel that they're under siege. They're starting to feel that they have to take matters into their own hands, and I've heard that more than once, which becomes concerning because more and more folks are asking, at what point can they discharge their weapon? At what point on their property when somebody is towing or pulling away a trailer full of goods or stealing a car, can they stop that individual from doing that? So what do we tell the people of Alaska in the meantime?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, in regards to being safe and feeling safe, those are two issues that are related, but they are different. And that in many cases, most police departments, most police agencies, they strive for the feeling safe. And they try to do that with presence, by outreach, by showing crime statistics and whatnot. Unfortunately, because of what we are going through with the increased thefts, the stolen cars, the break-ins of sheds and homes and even, again, siphoning gas out of things, there's a lot of publicity on it, and that helps disrupt that feeling of feeling safe and as opposed to being safe. It's actually not a bad concept of being a little cognizant about your own personal property and how to stay safe. But in regards to arming themselves and having weapons, that is one of those kind of questions that I wished everybody would do the research and understand what they can do and can't do as far as the legality of it. If we do respond because shots have been fired, we're going to investigate it just like we were supposed to and to determine if there was anything that was done wrong. The only advice that I would like to give is that if someone is thinking about utilizing deadly force, make sure that they're consciously aware of when it is justified and when it is not. Know where that bright line is, and don't yield to fear, don't yield to confusion. Make your decision based on knowledge.
Senator Dunleavy.
So I guess the question is, for the people of Alaska, is this the new Alaska? Is this something that they have to adjust to? Wondering if they should go in certain parts of cities, again, arming themselves, et cetera. Is this a temporary glitch that can be fixed if we all focus on public safety as priority number one? Or is this just a sea change and it's just going to be something we all have to get used to and get used to a more dangerous place?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy. I think that it was kind of mentioned earlier, crime is cyclical. And I think back in the late 80s, we actually had a higher crime wave, according to numbers, statistics, than we do now. And I am going to venture a guess. I was a patrolman and a sergeant back in the 80s, and I responded to crime all the time, obviously. But I don't remember seeing it that big of a deal on the news. I could have been. I just too busy to respond to it. But I think that it is cyclical, and I do think that we will come out of this. We're going to come out stronger. I think that in regards to your question of is this the new Alaska, I think it is for at least a temporary period of time until we can get the those who are perpetrating these offenses are actually dealt with. And that's, again, goes back to SB 54, where we can hold people accountable in a way that they're not being held accountable at the moment.
Thank you, Senator Dunleavy. Mr. President.
I was just going to say that the, whether this is the newer Alaska or not, we're being caught up in something that's happening nationwide. I watched Senator Sessions, or excuse me, Attorney General Sessions and his confirmation hearings the other day, and an amazing amount of time was spent on the opium problem that's going on nationwide and the huge rise in crime that's happening across the 50 states. Senator Machicki has some numbers. I don't happen to have them with me, but the other states have seen huge increases in crime, frankly, that we haven't seen. I think one of the numbers was like a 2,600% increase. We haven't seen anything like that. But nonetheless, we have seen an increase, and we have to do as a body here the best we can to adjust our laws and what we do have control over to fight that crime. But crime resides in the hearts of men and women. It doesn't reside in the statute books of Alaska. And by magically by passing a bill, we aren't going to magically get rid of crime. We're going to have to weather this thing that's going on in the United States. And I think the answers are larger than fixes to 91 or passage of SB 54. And it may take some time, and good luck.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Coghill, I mean Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. We have the same haircut. That's an honest mistake. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, you know, a little bit of a overview statement, then a question. And, you know, 91 had been, been implemented at least 6 months or so, and we've heard of shortfalls, and it was responded to, and 54 was the product that came out of the Senate, and certainly parts of the district that I represent in smaller communities, they feel these crime issues up close and personal a lot sooner than you would see it in a bigger city like an Anchorage or a Fairbanks. And in the Senate, we took that to heart and went right to work with it. And Senator Machicki spoke on that earlier and added some troopers back to the public safety to respond to those concerns. And I agree with you. You know, people have been violated. I've been violated. My house has been broke into. It's not a pleasant surprise. We've had to deal with a certain situation across from where I live with opioids. But with that being said, it's tough on people that have been a victim of crime. I think we're taking a measured approach, making these changes to correct this, to make people's lives better. But as you say and others, it's got to have some time to work. Now, that doesn't take away the sting of the pain, but we're hearing the public. And with that being said, this summer I had a little bit of an issue across the street from where I live, and so the troopers responded, and I had quite a discussion with a trooper. And he says there's about 50 or 60 of these known people, and if we could get them corralled, so to speak, lack of a better term, a large portion of this would go away in Fairbanks. And so I just wondered if you had a number for Anchorage of is it 250, is it 500 people if you could get them off the street? I don't know if you have that number, but that was interesting comment that he made to me.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, I don't have a number for Anchorage, but I do know that just on other issues that when I used to work there, that just in the homeless situation and the transports and all the other kind of stuff, it was basically 10% accounted for 90% of the transports. So what the trooper told you in regards to there are some very active individuals out there doing these things, it has some basis in other history and other issues. So again, that's a focuses on 54. If we can now take these individuals into custody and have them held accountable for what they're doing, then I think we will start to chip away at that percentage.
And then just to follow
Senator
up,
Bishop.
And then hopefully implement the balance of the bill to re-educate, train, treatment, so they don't go back out on the street and become a repeat offender?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, that's correct. It's, again, that was why I supported the concept. Just to take individuals off the street and warehouse them for a few years didn't really do anything. So this is a better and smarter way.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. With that, we will move on to our second presenter. We have John Skidmore, the Director of the Criminal Division, Department of Law. Mr. Skidmore.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen of, I guess, both judiciary and finance. My name is John Skidmore. I'm the Director of the Criminal Division for the State of Alaska Department of Law. The questions that have been posed to us this morning, and quite frankly that I've heard from the public in the last 6 months or so as I've attended numerous town halls around the state, are what can we do to address the problems that are out there? How can we try and make the criminal justice system more responsive to some of the concerns that exist? And the short answer I have for you is that you all, as the Senate, have already taken those actions. You have already passed 54. 54 contains within it multiple tools that allow us to address most of those problems that we hear people talking about repeatedly. We hear about vehicle thefts. We hear about people that are arrested or not arrested, people that are arrested being immediately released or not arrested at all. All of those sorts of issues are addressed through various provisions in Senate Bill 54. Let me be clear, however. I agree with what Commissioner Monaghan has said and some of the questions that you all have asked. 54 is not a silver bullet. 54, Senate Bill 54, is not going to magically fix everything. It does, however, return discretion to courts. It does provide additional tools to both law enforcement, prosecutors, and courts to try to respond to some of the problems we have. But overall, I also agree with Senator Coghill and with Commissioner Monaghan that other parts of 91 are very important to helping address those problems as well, to make sure that we get to the treatment to help us respond to the opioid crisis. So those are the general comments that I would make in an overview. I know there's probably a number of questions, and I'll happy to answer any questions that folks have.
Thank you, Mr. Skidmore. Do we have any questions from the Senate? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Skidmore, as we look at times that have gone by, one of the criticisms has been that the judges have been the ones that have been partly responsible for some of the crimes that are there, where they're not exercising every tool that they have at their disposal to go ahead and do that. You just made a comment that the courts are now have been re-empowered again to go ahead and try and have their effect on the crime rate. If that's the case, then it's like you're giving it back to some an entity, judges in particular, that have not been using everything in their disposal to go ahead and try and have their effect or try and curb the behavior on the criminals that are in front of them for sentencing. Do you understand the question?
So through the chair, Senator Olson, the timing of when you talk about judges not exercising discretion is the only piece that I'm not sure I'm clear on in your question.
Let's say the 10, 15 years ago till about 5 years ago.
Okay. So through the chair, Senator Olson, I'm not familiar with the criticism that judges were not exercising the discretion that they had to try to address the problems that were out there. I believe judges were exercising discretion and attempting to address the cases that they found in front of them. What the commission found, the Criminal Justice Commission found, was that sentencing folks to lengthy periods of incarceration when they were low risk, and that's one of the keys, when they were a low risk offender, was not helpful and could in fact be counterproductive. And one of the things that Senate Bill 91 attempted to do was to adjust sentencing discretion downward slightly to bring us back in line with sentencing discretion as it had been prior to, I guess it was about 2005 or 2006. And that by and large has an effort that we haven't yet determined the successfulness of it, but one of the areas in which that discretion was limited more than it should have been was for first-time Class C felonies. So Senate Bill 54 doesn't go back and try to adjust all sentencing provisions in our law. It really only focuses on those areas in which we were observing that the discretion had been limited too much. And so that's why 54 really focuses in on those areas that need adjustment. And for first-time Class C felonies, it adjusts it 0 to a year. That 0 to a year encompasses two types of jail. One we refer to as active imprisonment. That's the amount of time that someone will do right now. And then suspended time, which is the amount of time that a court imposes that can be used to respond to potential violations of probation. And both of those are encompassed in that 0 to 1 year. And it returns the discretion that would be necessary for judges to have. It does not return it to where it was before SB 91. SB 91, prior to that, it was 0 to 2 years. This is only 0 to 1 year. So it's trying to strike a balance between where I think you're asking me the question about, which was prior to us trying to do these reform efforts and then doing the reform efforts, which one's the right one. And I think what 54 is really trying to do is to strike that right balance between those two concepts.
Mr. Chairman, if I give an example. The example that was pointed out to me was that a judge goes ahead and sends somebody, say, to 5 years, and he's a high risk of recidivism, high risk of escalating up the ladder of severity on his crimes. He gives him a sentence of 5 years and has two suspended, or three suspended, for that matter. That was a number that was given to me in this scenario that was brought to my attention. I guess that's what I'm saying. He put the responsibility on the judges, that the judges were the ones that were suspending all these sentences to the point where it was allowing essentially just enough time for the criminal to go back into there, harden himself up, become more disgruntled, as was pointed out by the commissioner, become more and more antisocial, if not psychosocial, and therefore was coming out with a much... was not spending enough time behind in a controlled situation and where he was less of a threat to society.
So through the chair, Senator Olson, without knowing the crime or any of the other specifics, it's hard to comment a little bit in a vacuum, but a couple of things that I would want to make sure that we're clear about. The 5 years with 3 years suspended and 2 years to serve sounds like you have someone who's already a repeat offender, because under presumptive sentencing, we know that they would have had prior offenses, and to get to that 5 years, you really have to have been a repeat felony offender. So there needs to be some sanction for those repeat offenders. In terms of suspending time, we know that almost anyone, not everyone, but almost anyone that gets sentenced to time in jail will eventually be released from jail. And so the suspended time is the amount of time that's essentially hanging over someone's head while they're on probation. And we want them to return to society. We want them to be a more productive member of society. And I know that that's one of the things that the Department of Corrections is focusing on right now, is what are the things that we can do both while someone is in custody and what are the things that we can do when someone is released and returning to society to try to ensure that we reduce those recidivism rates. So I think those are things that are attempting to be addressed now.
No further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you. And this may be for both. So the administration is constructing their budgets now for next year. And there's a lot of question out there whether the administration is going to make this a priority focus for this coming year. In other words, there have been some, we're in an election cycle, so there's been some op-eds and other statements made by those running for office that this is a result of a lack of a tax or a lack of some type of revenue source. The question I have for you folks representing the administration is this going to become a focus for Alaska, for the budget cycle, for the budget development? Is this going to be an issue where we're going to see resources move from within the budget to focus on this, or move from other budgets, for example, the gas line, the $77 million in the gas line? Can we anticipate that this will become a focus for this administration, for the people of Alaska?
Let me take a stab at that.
You can start.
Commissioner.
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy. We just recently had a cabinet retreat, and the governor basically had pointed out to all of us that his number one priority is going to be public safety. It's a he's what he wants to do is a safer, a smarter, and a stronger Alaska. And the very first one is safer, because it's kind of like that Maslow hierarchy of needs. If you don't have security, you don't feel safe, everything else kind of withers in its place. So I can't speak for the governor, but I can tell you what my impressions were. And he certainly has the ability to correct them later on, or correct me. but it's it is something that we all hear, we all have seen. I'm sure you have been touched by your constituents about the issues that are out there, just as I have. And we want to get that addressed. So I would say that the focus will be how to improve public safety for everyone.
Mr. Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the criminal division has cut 31 prosecutors and staff, and there have been, according to the Attorney General, 7,000 fewer prosecutions between 2013 and 2016 due to these cuts. This past year, the legislature added back, I think, two prosecutors and staff, maybe three. Do you believe you have enough prosecutors and staff so that criminals are not being set free without consequences, or do you need more?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, if I lived in an ideal world and money were no object, I would tell you we certainly needed more prosecutors. But I know I don't live in that world. I don't think any of us do. And so where we find ourselves is that we do the best we can with the resources that we're given. I know that our budget is one of the discussions that is going on in the administration and how that will be managed. And ultimately, our budget is something that this body and the other body ultimately have to look at and make decisions about. So we're going to follow the lead that's given to us based on the resources that we have, and we're going to do everything we can with those resources.
Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. Just heard from the commissioner that public safety was this administration's top priority. So if you were in an ideal world, how many more prosecutors and staff would you need? That's question one. And question two is this statistic that I've heard for many years is that 90% of the crimes are drug or alcohol related, and roughly 50% of the crimes, the crimes that are committed, people have mental health issues. Are we devoting enough resources to substance abuse and mental health treatment?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I'm glad that you asked the second question as well as the first, because my answer is that when you look at society and the criminal justice system, it's not simply a matter of how many prosecutors do you need. It really is an entire system. You will need more prosecutors if you have more law enforcement on the streets. If you have more prosecutors, you're going to need more defense attorneys. You're going to need more judges. You're going to need more space for whatever the sanctions are to those criminal cases, whether that's going to be probation, whether that's going to be jail time, whether that's going to be treatment. Whatever it is that comes out at the other end of that, there will have to be more corresponding with that as well. And so I don't think these issues are as simple or straightforward as how many prosecutors should we have. I think that question is insufficient. I think you really have to come at it from what does the system as a whole need? What does society need? And those are bigger, complicated problems. I certainly will try and contribute to that conversation, but I certainly wouldn't have the answer to the entire system myself.
Thank you, Senator Wilkowski. Machicki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. They're really, just looking at the funding, I talked about this a little earlier, there really seems to be no correlation between spending and the crime rate. Would you agree with that?
through the chair, Senator Majicki, I don't know the answer to that. The way I think of it is that for law enforcement and for prosecutors, those are folks that are responding to the crimes that exist. And if we simply respond to the crimes exist, does that drive down the crime rate and stop people from committing crimes? I'd like to think that it does, but I don't have a definitive answer for you on that. If you increase spending for the criminal justice system as a whole, I think it's easier to have the resources then to hold people accountable and to try and get them to the treatment they need. And when you cut back on the system, there's less of that. But I don't know that I can say that one causes the other, which is, I think, really what your question is, sir.
Mr. Chairman, just looking at numbers in other states, some of the states are throwing money at the opioid problem and their crime rates continue to increase. And I personally, the numbers don't seem to correlate between throwing people at the problem and solving the problem. So do we have an increase in opioid abuse? And I've shown the chart that shows the number of prescription and heroin fatalities in the state of Alaska. They've gone up significantly. It follows a national trend. What other ways do you measure an increase in opioid abuse that's leading to some of these crimes?
Through the chair, Senator Majicki, the question of how you measure the size of opioid abuse is not an easy question to answer. I've listened to a number of other folks describe how they might go about trying to look at things. I can tell you some of the things that I've heard or that I've thought of. I don't know that any one of these is a definitive answer to your question. For instance, it seems to make sense that one would want to look at the amount of treatment that is available in the state and look at the use of that treatment and whether or not the use of the treatment has increased or decreased. If there was a way to measure how many of our cases that law enforcement or prosecutors deal with that have alcohol or drugs associated with it, you could undertake measures to require us to gather that data and give you specific numbers. The estimate that I think it might have been Senator Wilikowski mentioned, that 90% of cases are related to drug or alcohol abuse, feels right after 20 years of prosecution. I don't have a scientific study that I've done to tell you that, but that feels right. And so when you want to look at the size of the problem of the opioid abuse, you know, I also think my wife happens to be a healthcare provider, and I listen to her stories where, you know, she doesn't give me names, but I hear in her practice about the increase in the number of people that come to her that are suffering from drugs and alcohol, because as a healthcare provider, that's one of the things they have to figure out when they're trying to treat a number of health problems. So I don't doubt that the problem is increasing. But I think it's difficult to measure precisely how much it's increasing. But trying to treat those that are suffering from it is clearly one of the most important things that we can do. And I think that's a lot of what Senator Coghill tried to achieve with the criminal justice reform efforts that initially occurred. That's one of the things that we're still trying to focus on with SB 54. One of the reasons that the Department of Law has supported 0 to 1 year discretion for a court for a Class C felony, a first-time Class C felony, is that same amount of time legally is the amount of time the judge has to order someone into residential treatment, which is needed for many types of opioid abuse. So again, this is one of the steps that can be taken to try to address the problem, and we do what we can now, and then we monitor it, and hopefully that works better, and if there are other steps that are needed in the future, hopefully that we're able to come up with what those are.
Thank you, Director.
Quick follow-up.
Follow-up, Senator Majicki.
So getting back to the interruption of flow into the state, I mean, many of these states that are seeing the increases have multiple highways. They're bordering multiple states. There's a lot of ways into the state.
We are one state off by itself, got a common border with Canada. It comes in by air, comes on the ferry. Is the Constitution in the way? And this is for both of you, public safety and, of course, prosecution. Is privacy in this case a problem? What is your vision for moving forward on making it more difficult in nipping this problem in the bud before someone becomes addicted and turns to a life of crime for their drug supply and all those other complicating issues?
So through the chair, Senator Michicki, we certainly want to take efforts to interrupt that flow of drugs into the state. I absolutely agree with you on that point, and I know that the administration has spent a good amount of time over the last several months analyzing that very problem and trying to come up with some concrete steps. I believe that they have come up with a number of concrete steps that they are hoping to discuss some of them publicly, and I think they're supposed to be doing that next week sometime. The question of is the Constitution in the way, first and foremost, I guess I'm a lawyer and a citizen of the country, and I don't ever think the Constitution's in the way. I think the Constitution sets forth the primary principles and values by which we all want to live. Does privacy prevent us from stopping every single person coming into the state and searching their bags? Yes, it does stop us from doing that. But I'll tell you, that's not the state or the country that I want to live in, and I don't think many people out there would. So we want to find a way to interrupt that flow that still respects those values that I think most of us, if not all of us, accept and agree are the right ones for us to have.
Yes, we're getting ready to wrap up, but
just a quick comment. I'd like to... That U.S. Customs agent that went through my car, he didn't have no problem getting in all my bags.
I think they made a special exception for you, sir. But no, I'm joking. I don't know anything about that situation. I'd be happy to talk with you more about it later.
There goes your budget.
Senator Stevens, do you have a...
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. With that, Commissioner, do you have any closing comments before the Joint Committee of the Senate Finance and Senate Judiciary?
Mr. Chair, the only thing I think I'd like to add is that part of the beauty and why I supported the justice reform to begin with is already I had already mentioned about the addressing it in a more humanitarian way. But some of the savings that we were going to realize if we do this correctly is that it will help us on the treatment facilities. It will, things that we don't have stood up in the degree that we need to now. We already have an alcohol problem in this state. We're well aware of that one. But what we need, when an addict has a window that they want to truly get off of it, it is a small window. It happens periodically. And when they do make that request, can I detox? And if they're told, well, we'll have an opening in about 8 months, that window's closed long before that. So, again, please don't look at it just as a punitive thing. This is supposed to be a healing thing for everybody. And so that's one of the reasons why I supported it. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, Co-Chairman.
I'd like to close with maybe three comments. First of all, thank you for coming here to kind of give us your take on Senate Bill 54 and committee. Your concern for the public safety from the administration, from the legislature, is real and important. And what's going on in Alaska is just not acceptable. Most of us know that from constituents and from personal experience, and you and the law and in enforcement have to meet the victims day after day, hour after hour. So however we can get the resources to the right place at the right time so that people will feel safe, but society is dishing up stuff faster than we really know how to do it. But some of the reforms aren't even truly in process in implementation yet. So let me just reiterate three dates that people will keep in mind. And one of them is July of 2016. That's when the reforms began to be implemented and the reinvestment into programs began to ramp up. That was just July 2016, just over a year and a half ago. Then last January, we got the community supervision part and the parole policies put into place, which are just now landing with their feet under them, basically, even after all these months. And then this January, the probably one of the things that I think will be a new change that is beneficial to everybody is pretrial supervision, which for the first time in Alaska's history, we'll be doing in a very clear way, looking at their ability to get to court and the public safety matter, rather than just how much cash do you get to get out of jail bail. It's a risk factor issue. So those are going to be things that we'll just deal with. Probably some $26 million have gone into a variety of different areas, from victims' advocacies to into DOC treatment issues, which don't take off overnight and are not perfect even at their inception. And when they were working well, we're just adding to their load, and that's everything from ASAP to victim services. And then the other thing that I would like to recommend to the members of both committees and to the administration and to anybody who will be able to get a hold of this, and I'll do my dead level best to get it to you, the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission report just came out October 22nd, so it's hot off the press. A lot of the questions that you asked today were answered in that report. And the next steps, by the way, what do we do for some of our behavioral health issues, which a big portion of our prison population and our criminal justice issues have to deal with not only drug and alcohol use, but behavioral health continuing issues. So I think that the work is in progress, but I appreciate what you said at the Department of Law, that these tools to hold people accountable will return the discretion to the judges and hold people accountable at a higher level, that we thought we had hit that balance in Senate Bill 91, and from the outcry, we found out real quickly that the public was not satisfied and the police felt left languishing. And I think it's important that we get those tools into the hands of both the Department of Law and the police to make sure that when somebody does cry out for help, the tools will be there to help them. So we'll be glad to do that. And so this meeting was meant to highlight the fact that Senate Bill 54 needs to go across the finish line now. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. One quick question by Senator Machicki. He wants to squeeze in one more question.
Well, we haven't clarified this. For the folks in my community, in the Valley, in Anchorage, the car thefts, the guys on the street the next day, the burglaries, small businesses that are no longer even stopping people that are shoplifting small amounts because no one comes, nothing happens. What do I tell them? What do you tell them? Should we or should we not repeal Senate Bill 91? For those that believe Senate Bill 91 is the cause, even though, Mr. Skidmore, I brought you down to Soldotna in 13, I think we figured out, when we had fairly dramatic, the increase started back then. Why not repeal Senate Bill 91 and start over?
I think that if you, through the chair, Senator Machicki, I think that if you repeal Senate Bill 91, you will lose many of the important steps that were taken to try and reform the system to make it work better. The overall concept was that we had a number of folks who had been in prison that when they were released were very quickly committing new crimes again. And that's the piece that we were attempting to try to address through Senate Bill 91, trying to get folks into treatment, trying to reduce that recidivism. So there are very important concepts in 91 that should not be completely thrown out, and there's no reason to start over with them again. The areas where there are concerns really were in that phase one where we had classification and sentencing, and after those were implemented, we determined that there were some of those reforms that were having unintended consequences. That's why we made the suggestions to
alter that in Senate Bill 54. That's what Senator Coghill has been attempting to do. Those are the right steps to take right now at this time. Is that a silver bullet? I will again say no. It's not going to immediately stop all crime, but it does provide appropriate discretion for law enforcement, prosecutors, and judges to try and respond to the crime that's happening out there right now. But to completely do away with 91 also throws away many of the good things that are there. And I know it's the last question, so I don't want to go into too much detail, but a quick example is that when somebody's on probation, not just having a stick but also having a carrot, earned compliance credits. Those are one of the a quick example of something that's very helpful, that's very positive, and is something that we want to have in our system. That's part of Senate Bill 91, and to throw all of it out would be a mistake.
Thank you for that, and thank you for your last question. I'd just like to thank all of the committee members for asking the questions. Thank the administration for their participation. Anyone that has been watching us on TV or over the radio can truly identify that the Senate is concerned about public safety, is sincere about our efforts in trying to correct and reverse the problems that are facing the state of Alaska. We today are having an overview of Senate Bill 91 and an overview of Senate Bill 54, which this body had passed. It is over in the other body for their action, and we are doing this to this hearing to show the people of Alaska that the Alaska State Senate is concerned. And not only have we included an extension of the commission to address future problems, as Senator Coghill had said, we just received the latest report by that commission yesterday, and the commission has been extended. So those provisions and those extensions are in Senate Bill 54. Again, there is no silver bullet, but the Alaska Senate is willing, concerned, and ready and able to try to address the safety of all people of Alaska. With that, just an announcement. Tomorrow we're going to have our second joint meeting in this room at 10:30. We'll be hearing from Commissioner Dean Williams, the Department of Corrections, Randall Burns, the Director of Behavioral Health, Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Alaska Court System. With that, we will stand adjourned.